Ramsey TV.
I had a dream a couple of nights ago about the man who saved the free world. And in the dream, I was aware that here was a lesson. Now, I guess after I woke up and reviewed it in my mind, here was a lesson about the nature of evil, how evil was manifested today. I was able to relate it to the evangel and the proclamation of the evangel, how the evangel is withstood, that is, how the gospel of the grace of God is withstood today, who does it, how they do it, and how everything is a deception unless God gives you the spiritual eyesight to see what is happening beneath the surface. This is Martin Zender, and I'm broadcasting, as always, from my kitchen here in Fort Lauderdale. Well, not always. Sometimes I broadcast in my car. I'm not feeling too great today, so I'm not my usual self, but that's okay, because it's not about the messenger, it's about the message, and I have a message for you today. So, in my dream, I was in a water world, contained in a room, probably about this size, and there were tables set up, and people were dining at the tables and playing games, and they were above the water from the waist up. And I noticed in the middle was the man who had saved the free world. And I recognized him immediately. Even though that man is dead, in my dream, there he was, looking old. He was wearing a white t-shirt and suspenders. He seemed unaware of the magnitude of his accomplishment. He was quite jovial, quite happy to be playing cards. He was playing cards with some fellows. I don't know who the other people were. But what struck me was the man's humility. I mean, I knew instantly who it was. Now, in this water world, I was an observer, and I was able to put on scuba masks, go underneath the surface, and look at things. Being the curious type, even in my dreams, I went underneath the water. And what I saw was shocking. I mean, I saw fish of every kind, but what dominated my view was a large predator fish. It was either a shark or a barracuda. I think it was a shark. I was alarmed because a shark began to swim toward the people at the table, especially toward the man who saved the free world. Now, my ex-wife Marcia was in this dream, and I handed her the mask. I came up and I said, "You have to see this." I handed her the mask, told her to go down and look. And she went down and looked and came back up and said, "I didn't see anything." I said, "What?" I put the mask back on. And there's the predator again. But she couldn't see it. That plays into this. It plays into a real life experience of mine. I talk about my real life experiences because I'm the only guy, I'm the guy that I know the best. And so I share things with you to help you. It's not because I like talking about myself, even though I do. I love talking about myself. But that's not the reason I'm sharing this. So she couldn't see anything. Now, this is interesting because during my marriage, Marcia once told me, I'm not kidding you, this is what she said. She said that she had a dream years ago, and in her dream, and as she related it to me, Satan wanted to get me. Satan wanted to kill me, but he couldn't kill me. So she said he was using her to get me. I mean, it was very honest of her to say this. He was using her to get me, to kill me, or do something to me to disable me in the evangel. So, and years later, this is the strange thing, after forgetting about that, that was probably 10 years in the rearview mirror by that time, Marcia said to me, it was now time for me to stop doing this work. At the time, I had probably been 15 years doing this work. It was time to stop that, get a regular job, a real job, and help her go to college. And it's so interesting, the timing of that, because it had been just 2 days before when I was questioning this whole calling. This was a crisis point, because if things had gone a different way, you would never know me. I would never know you. You wouldn't be listening to any of this. This was a crisis point. So I had asked God, should I continue to do this in the future? And it was an overwhelming yes. And the pressing thought was, to win the race, you have to finish well. This is with any race. It doesn't matter. If you're running the mile, you can run the first three laps like a champion. But if you don't finish, it doesn't count. And I knew I had to finish. So then, 2 days later, you need to stop this work. And without thinking, obviously, because nobody thinks and said what I said. I said, get behind me, Satan. My advice to husbands out there, this is not a good thing to say to your wife. Okay? But I said it, and I meant it. But strangely enough, it was a fulfillment. Not that I put any stock in dreams. I don't put any stock in mine, let alone other people's dreams. But this seemed to be exceptional. It was a fulfillment of her dream earlier that Satan was going to use her. And this is not the only thing that happened, but that example will suffice. So she couldn't see the enemy under the water in my dream. And there are many people blind to the enemy and how the enemy operates. Because the enemy operates under the surface. Satan does not attack us directly. He attacks us through human beings. A very helpful verse here is Ephesians chapter 6. And in verse 11, speaking of the armor of God, put it on to enable you to stand up to the stratagems of the adversary. For it is not ours to wrestle with blood and flesh, but with the sovereignties, with the authorities, with the world mights of this darkness, with the spiritual forces of wickedness among the celestials. So we are under attack by spiritual forces of wickedness, but they attack us through flesh and blood. That's why when we feel attacked by flesh and blood, as polite as it might be, as soft as it might speak, it could very well be the spiritual forces of wickedness impelling the resistance through the agency of flesh and blood, especially the flesh and blood nearest and dearest to you. So, I so wanted to see what made this man tick. So, I didn't want to stare at this man. So, I went under the water again, and I swam around his seat. I wanted to look. I wanted to see what made him. And there was nothing visible that would tell you that this man had saved the free world. No matter how many, from any angle I inspected it. And then I realized that, well, listen, God uses words to convey his revelation to us. So words are extremely important. Words are powerful. Was it Shakespeare who said, the pen is mightier than the sword? Somebody said it. When Abraham Lincoln met Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, he said to her, so you're the little woman who started this big war. Harriet Beecher Stowe put flesh and blood upon slavery. Many people in the North, it was an abstract concept to them. She portrayed it literally. It was melodramatic, and yet this was the best-selling book of the era, and it was critical. It was seminal. It was really a trigger that started the Civil War. That's why Lincoln said, you're the little woman who started this big war. That was Abraham Lincoln said that. Now I want to read you a quote from a biography. This is a quote. On March 8th, 1983, there appeared before a lectern in Orlando, Florida, a black and white man. He was a driven man with a moral passion that could only be described by one biographer as, quote, a clean hatred, unquote. He was not so much obstinate in the face of impossible odds as he was unable to comprehend the reason that challenges faith. Thus, he believed the way a child believes, ardently and absolutely. A writer once said of him, quote, mock him if you will, but I've never known anybody with such an ability to reduce a situation to its simple essence. It was his desire this day to end his speech with a final point concerning the willingness of Marxist-Leninist leaders to sacrifice morality for the progress of their revolution. In this biography, the man at the lectern that day in Orlando, Florida, in 1983 is quoted, and I quote, I think the refusal of many influential people to accept this elementary fact of Soviet doctrine illustrates an historical reluctance to see totalitarian powers for what they are. Let us pray for the salvation of all those who live in that totalitarian darkness. The focus of evil in the modern world. I urge you to beware the temptation to ignore the facts of history and the aggressive impulses of an evil empire. To simply call the arms race a giant misunderstanding and thereby remove yourselves from the struggle between right and wrong and good and evil. Unquote. The writer of this biography, Edmund Morris, wrote this. The reaction to Reagan's speech was extraordinary, not only for intensity, but the diametric opposition of conservatives who loved it and liberals who took it to be a declaration of rhetorical war. And that was just within the boundaries of the United States. In Europe, the president was variously perceived as the archetypal American naif, an old actor moving from script to script, and a binary-minded simpleton who thought all issues could be reduced to checkboxes marked yes or no. The consensus of critics was that he had expressed coarse and confrontational sentiments that were bound to increase East-West tensions. In an official response circulated by TASS, Yuri Andropov accused the president of being deliberately provocative and obsessed by a bellicose, lunatic anti-communism. KGB agents were instructed to make a slogan of the phrase Reagan eto voina, which means Reagan means war. Ironically, little attention was paid to Soviet domestic opinion. Not for years would evidence begin to gather that the word evil had penetrated the Russian soul. It was a word, however, unspoken, guiltily familiar to every Communist Party member. The party had, after all, killed more innocents than any despotism in history. Western travelers who happened to be well-connected and in Moscow at the time of the president's speech remember a feeling of instant shock. Within 24 hours, one of them told me, I was hearing of the reaction spreading through society of self-disgust and self-acknowledgement, unquote. Other presidents had bad-mouthed Soviet communism, said one. Said another, yes, but never so directly and in such plain language. You may have heard me compare communism, totalitarianism, statism, central government to the doctrine of eternal torment. I have been known to call Christianity an evil empire, modeling my hatred of it on Ronald Reagan's speech in Orlando that day in 1983, when, with the simplicity of a child, he exposed the heart of communist Russia, calling it an evil empire. Evil was a word that people used in comic books. The dark forces versus the light forces. The empire versus the dark side. It was way politically incorrect. It was thought provocative. It was thought that it would, rather than avoid war, invoke war. But history has shown us, with the collapse of the evil empire, that to properly enlighten the public as to the nature of a thing, that thing must be exposed, and it must be exposed starkly. It must be exposed with elementary words that everyone understands. It cannot be exposed with gray words. It must be exposed with black and white phrases. It cannot be politically correct or it won't work. Reagan knew this, and with the simplicity of a child stated communist Russia to be an evil empire. And this struck a chord with the citizens. It exposed to them their own hearts, their own government. Those who were not sympathetic to the government heard that and maybe for the first time said yes. Like the emperor with no clothes, the young boy points out the facts and everybody says, wow, you know, he's right. And so from inside out, the Soviet Empire collapsed. Eternal torment is the heart, really. It's the heart of Christianity. It's the driving force, even though it's not always stated. In fact, these days, rarely stated. But it's there. It's the crazy uncle they keep locked in the attic. But it is used, either obviously or subversively, to scare people into going to the church, into saying a sinner's prayer, into letting the organization put another notch on its belt that they've gotten another member. They haven't gotten that member by proclaiming the love of God, but by scaring the hell out of people. Therefore, Christianity is an evil empire. Satan doesn't like that message to go out. Even among ourselves, there are those who would rather use nice language. They would rather not be so hard on the organized church. But would indulge it with kinder, gentler phrases. But this is ineffective. It's a waste of breath. One need only look at the examples of our Lord, who called the Pharisees hypocrites, vipers, whitewashed tombs. This shocked the consciousness of the populace. It woke them up, and it caused many of them to leave and follow Christ. Paul did the same thing. For the first time, a man of the nations comes to the body of Christ, Sergius Paulus, on the island of Cyprus, and he does so because Paul, with great boldness and a childlike identifying of evil, said concerning the magician Bar Jesus, how long will you distort the straight ways of the Lord, you son of the adversary, you enemy of all righteousness? This magician was a servant of the proconsul Sergius Paul. And Sergius Paul, seeing this, was impressed. It moved him. It shook him up. And he believed the message of Paul. I call it shock therapy. It works every time. Every time it works. When it's accompanied by a right message. This is where exposure and rebuke come in, and entreaty comes later. Paul exposed and rebuked the false prophet, and only then did he explain the details of his message to the proconsul, who believed. Did I mention Paul blinded the magician? That was a cherry on top. I made a video called Christianity, the Evil Empire. If you haven't seen it, I'm going to link it down here. The weird thing about it is it's my most viewed video. Top. Why? Because of the title. Because it gets to the point. It exposes the evil empire that Christianity is. I say things like, I would rather take my 10-year-old kids to a strip club than take them to a church. That's shocking, but I believe it, and I tell the truth when I say that. If I had the choice between the two. There are several good books out there on the topic of the salvation of all. The first one I read was by Andrew Jukes called The Restitution of All Things. Not a very snappy title, but I was a hungry person, and so I waded through the 19th century archaic English and got the truth. Modern books include Jerry Boschman, Hope Beyond Hell. Much better title. Sounds a little theological for some people. Well, not as theological as At the End of the Ages, The Abolition of Death by Bob Evely. A little complex, that title. You know, I think I have two books left to write. Only two. I have many in the hopper that will be coming out. I want to finish The History of the Universe. I got halfway through it in my newsletter, and then I lost all desire to write. It was strange. God pulled the plug on that. Doesn't mean it's gone forever, though, and I don't think it is. I think it's going to come back. But for years, I wanted to take Thomas Allen's book, Christ Triumphant, another accurate title, but not very snappy, is it? Not very bombastic or powerful. Great on its own, but as far as attracting people who would otherwise not be interested in hearing these things, not great. But the book is phenomenal. Phenomenal. But again, written in 19th century English. Based on my dream, I thought of a great title for a book exposing the evils of eternal torment. And when I first came up with this title in my mind, the book is yet unwritten, but I know how to write it. I'm going to borrow Thomas Allen's book. I'm going to Zenderize it. I've rehearsed different titles in my mind over the years. I think I might have come up with one. When I first thought of it, I thought, well, you're not going to use that one. That's insane. That's crazy. Then I thought, why not? How about this? Eternal Torment Sucks Balls. Can you believe I'm going to end this epic video with that? Eternal Torment Sucks Balls. Actually, I have one more thing to say. And that is, I think that book would sell a million copies.